Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, November 10th. I'm Ray Graff. You know, there has been a preponderance of political talk across the country for lo these many weeks, and not nearly enough talk about birds. Well, today we right the ship. Rich Guthrie is on the line to answer your birding questions. Say it with me. Bird. Bird. One more time. Bird. If you have a question about birds, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Always a popular show when Rich is here. So call early. 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie and birds coming up. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Birds today. We are discussing birds. And when we do that, we always welcome Rich Guthrie. Rich is our resident avian expert. He is retired from the New York State DEC. He's a former board member of the State Ornithological Association. I think he should be a board member for life, but there are term limits. He's also a regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. If you have a question about birds, I urge you not to hesitate. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Richard P. Guthrie, how are you, sir?
Good afternoon, sir. I'm doing great. Beautiful, beautiful day.
Very nice to have you here, and it's been a great couple of days to watch birds. And I have a question for you about the sort of the makeup of the eye of your average bird. Do they see color very well?
You know what? That's a very good question. Birds see colors way different than we do. They see the usual red and green and yellow. We can tell that by the way they behave when they react to those colors on other birds of their species and the like.
Yeah.
But they can see beyond, below and beyond our color spectrum. They can see infrared and ultraviolet outside of our normal rainbow colors.
Right.
And that gives them a huge advantage out there.
You know, I was wondering whether they prefer, in general, red.
I don't know.
Okay.
There's some clues that suggest you may be onto something there.
Yes.
And actually, I don't know if anybody undertook a study of preferences.
Well, here's the thing. We have evidence. I was talking to our engineer, Zach Malloy, today out in the parking lot, and his car is red, and I got to tell you, it might as well have a bullseye on it. And we think they like red quite a bit, Rich. Is that possible?
I think they like Zach a lot, or maybe the opposite. Well, I'm not quite sure.
Thankfully, Zach is not festooned, but his car certainly is. Hey, this email came in from Rich Guthrie today with an incomprehensible subject heading. It says, sage advice, tropical kings, and bohemians of similar sort. What are you talking about, Rich?
Well, I'm talking about the rare birds that are out there right now. This is a time of year. We're in November now. And this is when stuff shows up that is totally off the charts. And that's what's happening out there right now. The sage advice, there's a bird from the West called the sage thrasher.
Yeah.
Related to our mockingbird and the brown thrasher of the East Coast. But this guy belongs in Mexico. And here he is. He's been there for more than a week over at a place near Chatham, New York, in Columbia County, New York.
Yeah.
Called OOMS Conservation Area.
Mm-hmm.
And this sage thrasher, named for the sagebrush, Riders of the Purple Sage, is out there and way out of place.
That's interesting.
And then also, the Tropical Kings is all about the tropical kingbird that showed up down in Dobbs Ferry, New York, right by the Mercy College and right outside the Metro North rail station.
Know it
in
well,
Dobbs
yeah.
Ferry. A tropical kingbird.
Now, where's the tropical kingbird from?
The tropics.
All right. Okay, can you...
Yeah, they belong outside. And it's the first time one has ever been seen in New York.
That's cool.
It turned around and went the wrong way. It belongs someplace in Brazil right now, mm-hmm. or Venezuela. It's probably one of those from Argentina that just didn't put on the brakes soon enough and ended up in Dobbs Ferry, New York.
Do we know why some birds do that?
Just a mix-up in their navigation system.
Yeah.
They get started... There's a few of those that do that each and every now and then. The fork-tail flycatcher of a few of last month that was down at a Chocan Reservoir in Ulster County, New York,
mm-hmm.
same thing. And there are others out there that have this tendency or propensity. Every now and then an individual just sort of keeps on going. It, instead of stopping in Brazil where it's supposed to, it flies up through Panama and up through Mexico into Texas and then keeps right on going and then stops here. Or maybe it just keeps on going from here. So this is a time of year when these strange species show up. And, it's always a challenge. The word is expect the unexpected. So that flycatcher or that sparrow that looks a little bit different or the hummingbird that may still be out there, these are things to keep an eye out for and let us know. And if you don't know what it is, by all means, ask.
Okay, that was getting to my question for you. Somebody down in mm-hmm. Dobbs Ferry says, oh, my good Glavin, there's a tropical kingbird. I assume in order for Rich Guthrie, noted skeptic, to say, yeah, that's the thing, you got to take a picture and send it along. And where do you send it?
Yeah, pictures help. And you can send it, first of all, enlist in eBird, E-B-I-R-D. That's a Cornell University and National Audubon Society interactive website that you can enter that information on there, including the photo. And lots of people will see that and say, wahoo, or no, I don't think so.
Okay.
And then there's another site. Here's where we get some very interesting reports. In fact, the Sage Thrasher came up through What's This Bird?
Oh.
That's a Facebook page. And people put the pictures of the bird and said, I don't know what this is. Do you? And voila, you get answers. And you get a lot of wowzers out there.
I mean, I assume since that's not vetted, you get a lot of wrong answers as well.
Yes. And in fact, it's entertaining to see all the stuff that comes up, you know, as what this may be, because anybody is, you know, it's fair game. It's this is not a jury critic. This is a free for all. And so it's kind of like, all right, keep on coming. Somebody may sooner or later hit the target. And but anyway, it's a way of finding out. And sometimes these are challenging questions, and we really don't know. You know, you need a better picture, or maybe a different angle, or where did you say you took that picture from?
Right.
You know,
yeah, a little background information. Any other strange sightings recently before we take a break and then hit the phones?
Yeah, all over the place. Let me run down a short list.
Yeah,
all right?
Sure.
In Addison, Vermont, a harlequin duck.
Wow.
In Great Barrington, Massachusetts, Canada Jay. Canada Jays belong in Canada. There's one over in our neighbor. If you're in Massachusetts, right there.
Bohemian what's the difference? Hang on. Let's go back to the Canada Jay. How do you differentiate that from, say, the South Jersey Jay or whatever?
Well, the most recent wrong name for them was gray jay,
mm-hmm.
and that's what they are. We have our blue jay, Texas has their green jay, and Canada, gray jay.
Interesting.
They since renamed it to the Canada Jay, which is really appropriate because it is from Canada, and really it's kind of a symbol of the Great North. We have a few in the Adirondack Mountains and in the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont and the White Mountains of New Hampshire, but they're really from Canada.
Hmm.
But out west, there's a population of them that swings down and goes through the Sierra Nevadas and the Olympic Peninsula called the Oregon Jay, a subspecies nonetheless, same bird, Canada Jay.
Okay.
Then the other thing is that the Bohemian Waxwing. That's a big cousin of our Cedar Waxwing. That's up in Lake George, New York, in Hague.
Yep.
Red poles and hummingbirds. There's a rufous hummingbird right now in New York State, and probably a few others around.
So, a rufous, did you say?
Know, if you, rufous.
Yeah, well, what does that look like?
It's kind of like reddish color.
Hmm.
Instead of the green of our ruby-throated hummingbird, you know, the green back,
yeah.
It has a brown back.
Oh, cool.
And that's one where photographs are really, really essential.
Right.
Tough to get, but the lesson there is if you have hummingbird feeders, keep them up because they're still around. And this mild weather, this gives them these guys are supposed to get out of town before winter sets in.
Yeah.
And they've got a bit of a reprieve here. And so one or two that may, you know, kind of lingering a little too long. Now's a chance for them to fuel up and get out while they can.
Now, if a hummingbird like that decides, oh, I got a couple more days, and then they get frozen out, is that curtains? I mean, do they end up like Jack Nicholson in The Shining at the end of the movie there, frozen solid?
Well, yes. It's unfortunately, some of them push the limit a little bit too far.
Yeah.
And don't quite make it. But other ones, you know, the rufous hummingbird is a sturdy little guy. I mean, they nest up in that Alaska. They nest in the high peaks of the Rocky Mountains and the Sierra Nevadas. So they have a bit of gumption. They can make it. Some of the other hummingbirds that show up, such as the Anna's hummingbird, AAAN hummingbird, well, they come from San Diego, Los Angeles area of California, and they better turn tail and move.
Now, that's a long way. You're telling me that these hummingbirds that are more common in San Diego sometimes make it up here?
Oh, sure.
That is crazy.
Yeah. And that's the fascination of it all. And some of these tropical hummingbirds that are from Venezuela or Panama, Costa Rica, they turn up in various areas as well. So, you know, they can fly. And if they can find nourishment along the way, they can keep going, much to their dismay. But but people who put hummingbird feeders up and watching them right now could be the ticket for these guys to make good.
Hey, Rich, let's take a quick break here. We have a lot of people on the line, an email or two, and then we will hit the phones. 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. If you haven't been able to discern the topic, it's birds. We'll get to your questions in a moment. T-Bone Walker for you here on Vox Pop. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. We will hit the phones momentarily. Hank, you're going to be our first caller, so hang in there. One email, Rich. This one's from Jonathan. Wondering how common yellow-headed blackbirds are in this area. Saw a female in a flock of mixed common grackles and red-winged blackbirds in my parents' Latham backyard. Never saw one before. How common are they?
Very, very rare.
Yeah?
Very rare. The yellow-headed blackbird is one of the best named birds out there for description. It's a blackbird with a lemon-yellow head. Great-looking character.
Yeah.
They are not uncommon out west. They're sort of like the red-winged blackbird of Montana and Colorado. But here in the east, no such thing, except now and then. One of them gets caught up and mixed in with the wrong crowd and shows up over here. The female is a little harder to tell apart, but very distinctive nonetheless. They have kind of like a dirty lemon head. But, that's unusual. I'd like to hear more about that. Again, eBird or my email, richardpguthrie@gmail.com. Always want to hear about these things so we can verify it. And sometimes something like that maybe, not likely, but maybe the beginning of a population shift or a trend or another story that goes with it.
Hmm. All right, let's hit the phones. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551, the number.
Oh, boy.
Hank, you got to turn the radio down there, Hank. Hello, Hank. Oh, Hank is listening.
Yeah, hi.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good.
Go ahead, you're on.
All right, great. So my question, all summer and all winter in Tolland, Massachusetts, the foothills of the Berkshires, about halfway between Springfield and the New York line right near the Connecticut border. All year long, I have all the winter birds, including tufted titmice. This year, almost no tufted titmice. And I've heard other people say something about them, and they're one of my favorite birds. And I'm just wondering, what on earth is going on? Is something wrong with their population?
Not likely. Hi there. No, that some they might all have decided to come to my house for the winter. Oh, there goes that Morse code again.
Rich, what are you doing? Are you got telegraphy going on over there? What's going on?
Somebody's trying to send us a signal, Ray. I'm not quite sure. Just a little interference on the line here. Oh, I read it. It says, remember to drink your Ovaltine.
That's very funny. All right, get back to Hank's question.
Yeah, the tufted titmouse. You know, there are southern bird species that recently has moved northward. And like the ebb and flow of the tide or the waves, they sort of come and go. They have their population ups and their population downs. Since it's been so mild out there, they may be wandering around the neighborhood and don't see a real need to show up in your yard just yet. So it could be any of those factors. So I would not give up hope. The tufted titmouse is doing well in Connecticut, Massachusetts, New York, and I expect it to continue to do so.
Hank, thanks a lot for the call. Rich, I hope that you don't have any emergency traffic over there on the Morse code line. Let's go to Chris in Housatonic. Chris, you're on.
Yeah. About 2 weeks ago, I saw a close-up eagle on the back roads in Housatonic. And he flew off, and I was wondering if eagles can fly above the clouds. And my last question is, no one's ever talked about this on birds. Can pelicans fly out of the state of Florida?
Yes, they can.
Yeah, okay, good. That's a good start.
Yes, no problem. Pelicans can go where they want. The question is, do they want to or not? And as far as eagles above the clouds, probably not. And the reason for that is that eagles and other birds that soar in the air rely on warm air currents rising to give them the lift that they need. And once you start getting above the clouds, you lose that uplift. So on cloudy days, foggy days, and the like, they're not likely to be soaring around. They may flap. But when you get up that high, the air is thin, the lift is lower, and the eagles come back down again.
All right, Chris.
And wait it out. They don't need to go that high.
Thank you very much for the call, Chris. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Birds Today. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Anita is in Clinton. Anita, you're on.
Hi. I was watching a flock of Canada geese on a pond down at Rogers, and one bird in the flock looked really different, and I didn't know what it was. It was heavier. The butt was rounder, and the tail kind of stuck up straight, and the beak was a very faint salmon color and sort of thick. Not exactly chunky, yes. But do you have any idea what that would be?
It sounds to me like more like a barnyard goose, descended from the gray lag goose of Europe, and they typically have, you know, they're kind of a paunchy goose with a goofy look on them, and they blend in with the Canada geese crowd because they're all accepting, he doesn't belong there. He's just somebody's goose that walked away from the farm.
Oh, I see. Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Anita.
You're quite welcome. Thanks.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551. The number, it's Birds Today on the program. And Alex is in Saratoga Springs. Alex.
Hi, good afternoon, Rich. I have a question. My daughter, who's in a virtual school, keeps getting startled by birds knocking on the siding of the house. These mostly are blue jays, and actually we had a woodpecker as well. And they tend to do it every morning, and then in the afternoon, I guess they're done. I'm assuming there's food in the siding, maybe insects. What do you think it is?
Probably insects. More likely that's the case when it comes to the woodpecker at this time of year. in the spring, the woodpeckers will be drumming against the house or any kind of resonant sounding wood or metal to proclaim their territorial claim. But this time of year, there's no need for them to do that. And so they're looking for food, testing it perhaps, or actually sensing that there's food in there. As far as the blue jay is concerned, it's more likely to be trying to crack open a nut. They'll take a seed and find a place where they can bang it against a hard surface to crack it open, and then they got it, you know. So that's probably the sound that they're making up against the house. They don't typically go drilling into wood looking for food.
So I shouldn't worry about my sighting getting taken down by blue jays or woodpeckers?
Well, don't worry about the blue jay, but be watching what's happening with the woodpeckers, because they may be the doctor that's diagnosing something else going on there.
In other words, watch out for the insects that might be there.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Alex. We appreciate the call. The number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest today. It's Birds Today and going to Woodstock. Mikhail, you're on.
Ah, thank you for taking my call. I love you both so much. There are no words.
Well, back at
you. Okay, my question, please, is about bird food, particularly bird food over the winter. I would like birds to think of my house, if they were trick-or-treaters, I want them to think of my house like the place that gives out the big, best Halloween candy, like the full-size bars and plenty of them.
Right.
All treats, no tricks.
Exactly. So my question is, please, with, 3 feeders, what would you recommend we provide, please?
Easy. Number one would be black oil sunflower seed. Number two, I would say, would be suet, beef suet, if you can get it, or suet cakes, almost as good. And then number three, I would say peanuts. Either shelled or in the whole peanuts. And I say that because I know how that works. I have the downy woodpeckers and the black-capped chickadees and the blue jays coming within inches of me for each and any of those. I put the suet out close by. I put suet further away for the shyer guys. But the blue jays and chickadees and nuthatches and titmice, they come right up to me. They actually land on my feet. I put my feet up on a railing.
Oh, come on.
And there they are. They see me come out the door, and they show up and say, where's the peanut for today?
No, Rich. Are you hallucinating, Rich? The birds come up and land on your feet is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I have my feet up on the railing. I'm sitting in the glider. I put my feet up, and you know that's just makes it a little easier for them to get at the peanut that I put out there.
I don't know, Mikhail. You believe that if you want. You want to follow up with anything?
No, thank you. That's a great answer. Oh, actually, yes, please, if you don't mind.
Sure.
So, no fruit?
No, not real. Well, you know what? I'm looking, actually, if you want to try putting out a grape jelly, first of all, you have to get the bird to know that it's there.
Peanut butter and jelly? Yeah. Is that what we're doing?
But I know people who have put out grape jelly, and some of the birds, once they find it, they love you for it.
I want to be the lady the birds love. Although I don't know if I'll have chickadee feet. We'll see.
No, Mikhail, what you want to do is honestly. Put your feet up, slather them with grape jelly, and just wait for the birds. What do you think? Yeah? And take a picture and send it to richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
Hey. Yeah, I don't know.
All right.
We'll see. All right, well, thank you both.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Thanks, Mikhail.
800-348-2551 is the number. It's Birds Today. Richard P. Guthrie is with us, and we go over to Mike in Winchester. Mike.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Great show. Rich, eBirds is a great website. Thank you for putting that up. And then I wanted to reassure Hank. I'm about 20 miles south of Hank. We have plenty of tufted titmouses here.
Oh, good. Good.
So things are good here. I had a little flock of hooded Merganses on the water here. I had never seen any of those before, so that was pretty awesome. We have the common here, but that was the first time to see the hooded. I wish I had seen them in plumage, but I guess this isn't the time of year. And, Rich, would you help me, please, with pronunciation of two words, two names? The big woodpecker, is it pileated or pileated?
Oh, here we go.
It's actually either or both.
Is it? Okay, good. So my son and I will
depends on where you're all from. Agree.
And what do you prefer,
yeah,
Rich?
Yeah, fantastic.
I grew up with pileated.
Okay.
And nobody dare correct me by telling me it should be pileated.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay. And then the other one, Rich, is so in the species of, like, you have your rough-legged, your red tails, and your broad-winged hawks, and it's spelled B-U-T-E-O. I've never heard that pronounced. How do you pronounce that?
A deep U, beauty-o.
Beauty-o.
So, beauty-o.
Beauty-o.
Awesome, okay.
As in beautiful beauty-os.
There you go.
I appreciate that, gentlemen. Have an awesome afternoon. I hope you get to see some birds today.
Hey, Mike, thanks a lot for the
call. You're the man. Thank you.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. And Gabby in Albany. Gabby, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thanks for the call.
Sure.
A few weeks ago, I was down in New York City over by the... I would say five or six little birds on the sidewalk. And... there was a lady as we were walking by, and I said, look, there's another bird. And she said, have you seen her? And so she was the Audubon Society. I imagine some sort of volunteer looking at causes of death for these birds. I imagine that some of that had to do with types that are used in high rises. Are there recommendations that the Audubon Society or other organizations have for architectural glass that prevents bird deaths.
Right. Now, you dropped out several times, but I think we have the full gist of what you're talking about, Gabby. Rich.
Okay.
Yes, thank you. That's very, unfortunately, not too uncommon tragedy out there. And it's not so much about the glass, it's the height of the buildings. That's right along the pathway of these birds as they're migrating, mostly migrating at night. They don't see the building. They slam into it at their high migration speed, and unfortunately, it's very tragic. It's quite often too fatal. Mm-hmm. And there are organizations in New York City and other places that do study these building collision birds. And there are a few recommendations, and then I think it started out in Ottawa, Canada. But other big cities have taken it on where during the migration season, they reduce the lighting of buildings at night. Light at night draws birds into them. Uh-huh. Lighthouses along a rocky coast sometimes will have many birds flying around the light beam. And buildings in the city during dark nights will fly into the birds will fly into the building unwittingly. Very, very sad. And some of these buildings are so high up that they present a real hazard for the birds. And so now when it comes to window glass around the house, which is also a cause of mortality amongst birds, and there are measures you can take. The American Bird Conservation and Cornell University, All About Birds, and other organizations will have information about how you can reduce or prevent window strike mortalities amongst birds, and I highly recommend it. There has been a volunteer effort on parts of many of the cities, including such as the Empire State Building and the World Trade Center Memorial, where during high migration periods, they will turn down the lights so the birds aren't drawn into it, much to their dismay.
Gabby, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it very much. Let's take a quick break. Rich has a list of things, I presume, that are going on bird-wise around here. We'll get to that on the other side of the break. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back. Oh, little more T-Bone Walker for you here on Vox Pop. Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's Birds Today. 800-348-2551 is the number. And Rich, do you have a little list of things going on?
No, as a matter of fact.
Wow.
No, and here's the thing. With this whole COVID stuff going on out there,
the what now?
Groups are very concerned about the participation and crowdsourcing separation, whatever they call that. So here's what I recommend. Go out there with your family and find your own bird.
Yeah.
Go online to your local bird club. Be it the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club in the Albany area, or the Mearns Bird Club, or the Hudson Valley, Hudson River Audubon Society, Massachusetts Audubon Society, and learn from them what may be going on, especially in the virtual birding community, such as lectures or promote programs. And then one other thing I would like to mention, and that is the New York State Ornithological Association has this group called the Young Birders Club. And I highly endorse that for the younger folk, 18 and under, 10 and up, that have an interest in birds and want to share that with others of their age set.
Yeah.
And it's actually terrific. I wish they had something like this when I was a kid. Back then it was kind of like, get out of here, kid.
Did they even have birds when you were a kid?
Oh, they had lots of birds.
Oh,
in fact, I hate to say it, but we had a lot more then than we do now. And that's a whole different story.
Yeah,
because,
that's another show, yeah.
But in any event, and it was kind of like they were not a very welcoming crowd back then, but now we got it. I mean, the kids themselves have decided they have formed this Young Birders Club and have made it fly in more ways than one. So
yeah,
so go for it. There's I know Massachusetts and Connecticut also have similar sorts of connections like that out there. So make it happen.
Out in the parking lot, there's a group of people standing around Zach Malloy's car just watching the birds fly over.
There's actually a field guide for that.
Yeah, I bet there is. Two emails here, Rich, and then we'll hit the phones for the home stretch. This one is from Tom. Tom says, I was riding by the Quabbin in Hardwick, Massachusetts, and a big bird with outstretched wings flew 5 feet over my car going in the same direction as I. I saw a flash of white under its head or on its head. If it was an eagle, why would it fly so low over my car?
Probably what happened is eagles, bald eagles, and the golden eagle, and other birds of prey, like the red-tailed hawk and the like, will take advantage of any opportunity to find food. And it's not beneath a bald eagle to find a carcass on the side of the road and chow down. So, and your coming along might have spooked it, and it was trying to get out of the way and move on. Let you go by. So I'm going to suspect it was a bald eagle that was feasting on something on the shoulder of the road till you showed up.
Fair enough. This is from Judy, and then we'll go back to the phones. Judy is in Poughkeepsie, and Judy says, I recently bought a bird feeder for the first time. A neighbor cautioned me that the DEC had told her that these feeders attract coyotes and recommend that I don't put it up. What do you think?
Nonsense.
Really?
Yeah, no such thing. Your neighbor may have been thinking about bears, and if you are in bear country, that's a matter of concern.
Okay.
Coyotes? No.
All right.
Coyotes around a bird feeder are probably a good thing because it'll help keep down the numbers of cats that show up.
Oh, here he goes on his cat tirade.
Yeah.
Let's go to Charlie in Kingston. Charlie, you're on.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good.
I'm calling in regards to telling the difference between hairy and downy woodpeckers. I had one drinking out of my hummingbird feeder the other day, and I always forget which one of the two is the bigger and which is the smaller.
Well, I'm going to suggest that if it was at your hummingbird feeder, it was the downy woodpecker. Downy woodpeckers are the smaller of the two. And a telltale, you can tell them apart by the size of the beak, the bill that they have. The downy is tiny, the hairy is larger. But the downy woodpecker has white feathers on the outside of its tail with black dots on it. The hairy woodpecker has those white feathers without the dots.
Ah.
And the other thing is the downy woodpecker They both look virtually identical, but the townie is the smaller of the two, and they're more versatile. Hairy woodpeckers would probably not be inclined to go after a hummingbird feeder. They just don't have the smarts to do it. But the downy woodpecker, checking out every possibility, and found yours.
Charlie, thanks a lot for the call. Now to Jennifer in Amsterdam. Jennifer.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question about turkey buzzards in my backyard. I live in town, but kind of on the edge, and there's a lot of woods. A couple days ago, I left the house, and the intersection about a half a block away, there was a turkey buzzard just standing in the middle of the intersection. And I stopped it. I thought maybe it had been hit by a car or something, but then it flew away. Then the next morning, I went out, and I've been feeding some feral cats so I can catch them. I put down the cat food, and I look up, and there's a turkey buzzard like 2 feet away from me, and then another one about 3 feet away, right in town.
Mm-hmm.
I made sure I kept moving.
Good advice. Yeah. Yes. So likely not turkey vultures. The ones that behave like that are the newcomers in the neighborhood, and that's the black vulture.
Oh, yeah.
They look very, very similar, but yeah. They have a longer legs, a sort of a gawky look, and not as charming as a turkey vulture, if there could ever be such a thing. But they're also very assertive. I don't want to say aggressive, but they are assertive. And they will help them. They're amazingly, they're intimidating in that respect. They'll stand by.
Yeah, he wasn't afraid of me at all, you know.
Exactly. And that's the nature of the black vulture and the difference from the turkey vulture. Turkey vultures will fly off. They don't like close proximity. Black vultures, am I on your way? Well, too bad. And that's how they are.
Yeah, I was surprised because I lived on a farm before I moved into town, and I was used to seeing the big turkey vultures all around, mm-hmm. if they found something dead out mm-hmm. in the pasture. But this was, mm-hmm. I've never seen one up this close,
Yeah, I know. And they like to sit on top of buildings in the suburbs of town or they're the newcomer and they
you
have their own set of rules.
They were after the cat food? Were they after the cat
yep.
food?
Yeah, the cat food.
Okay.
Now that they found it.
We do have a lot of wildlife here in town.
Yeah. Well, I've seen them sitting on sidewalks in the middle of town. People are walking right by them. They're just hanging out. They're really quite amazing.
Yeah, they don't. I thought something was wrong with them because, they were so bold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
nothing wrong with him. He's doing his thing.
Jennifer, thanks a lot for the call. Now let's jump over to Gansvoort. And Stephen, you're on.
Hey, Rich, Ray.
Hey.
I just wanted to give you a little follow-up that highlighted for me the importance of engaging one's brain before one engages the mouth. For a couple of years at our neighbors, we have heard in a general same direction calls from a bird that appeared to be maybe a mockingbird because it was four distinct different calls. And we thought, what the world is this? I called last year and recorded it and played the recording to you. And you said, I couldn't hear it as well as I could because of the recording, but you weren't quite sure. Well, I should have asked the neighbor. Turns out they have a recorded predator bird on their head calling out four different predator bird calls. So you go. There's the follow-up.
Yeah.
Huh,
well, bingo. I guess I'd be curious to know if their predator call deterrent was actually working for them.
It's working very well. It's keeping the birds away from our garden as well.
Oh, very neat. Well, that's great. You know, it occurs to me, Stephen.
Anyway, have fun, guys.
Thanks a lot. It occurs to me that if many of us engaged our mouths before we engaged our brain,
I'd be quiet.
Many of us wouldn't be engaged at all. All right, let's go to Barbara in Copaic. Barbara, you're on.
Hey,
there you go, Ray. Yeah.
Hi.
I have a question about single birds. Do they nest also, or is it just mating pairs? For instance, an adolescent eagle, would that have a nest?
Probably not. Nest building is pretty much the realm of a bonded pair. It's part of the bonding ritual between the two. And it's the job of the female to do all the work. Now, the male may help out by, especially like with eagles, they may bring in some stuff, you know, furniture, and the wife tosses it out or furnishes it rightly. But some birds actually go through the routines. And I'm thinking of over in Chatham, New York, there's a remarkable bird called the Prothonotary Warbler. The male was actually building a nest inside a truck transmission repair warehouse.
Wow.
Inside the building. And the guys in the repair shop were amazed by it. And the bird would sing away, and they're having a good old time. The male wren will oftentimes build a nest with the hopes of attracting a female. And, of course, the bowerbird is a famous one that builds this elaborate entryway to a nest site, hoping to entice a female to show up. But for the most part, it's a bonding ritual between the birds and single bachelors, bachelorettes, probably not so. They may build a nest and not intend to use it, but I think it's part of their pairsome.
Interesting.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks, Barbara. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551, the number. Joe in Ashfield. Joe, you're up.
Hey, tufted titmouses seem to be popular today, so I have a question about them.
Okay.
All summer we had one that's been trying to get into the house. He'd fly from window to window, and then he'd fly over to the car and start pecking at the side view mirrors on the car. And he did this all summer, and I'm just trying to figure out what is that behavior all about.
Yeah.
It's thanks for that. It's a fairly common thing, not so much with titmice as it is with robins and cardinals and the like. But that's all about their mistaking a reflection that they see as a rival bird. So they see the reflection, think it's somebody else trying to intrude on their territory, and it's their job to chase them out. It's kind of like a Don Quixote type of endeavor. Good luck to them.
I can see that with the mirror on the car, that they'd be able to see themselves good. But a lot of times when he's flying to each side of the house, there's not that much of a reflection. And he would go from window to window.
Yeah, it doesn't take much, but that's usually what the case is. Even with the window, there's probably enough reflection there for them to sense that there's an intruder, and mistakenly so.
He was pretty much by himself until we put out the feeders, and now we probably got about a dozen or more of them here in the yard.
Well, that's where they all are.
They're all at Joe's house. Hey, thanks for the call. Yeah. Speaking of little birds and such, Rich, you know, a couple of years ago, I told you that we discovered they were Phoebes, had built a little nest underneath our patio overhang. And do they stay all year, or is some other bird now inhabiting this nest?
Neither. The Phoebes are gone. However, there's always a chance that there's one staying around. And which brings to mind yet another rare bird that might show up is this Say's Phoebe, S-A-Y Phoebe, from out west. And even more remarkable is the Black Phoebe. These are the sort of things that that we in the birding community really, really, really want to go chase after and see and document. Something to keep an eye on. Now, as far as that nest is concerned, probably not going to be used by anybody else. There's no reason for them to go into a nest. Bluebirds and other birds of that sort will use a nest just as a roost site overnight.
Yeah.
Chickadees and titmice and bluebirds and nuthatches will find what might have been a hole in a tree and use that as a roost. But it's not for the same purposes as the Phoebe used it.
Interesting. Let's go to Liz in Cherry Valley. Liz, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Hi there. I had a bird last winter roosting in my barn. He was a beautiful male ringneck pheasant. He would mill around all day and roost in the barn at night. we're anxious to see if he's going to be a repeat visitor this winter. We hope he made it through the summer. So my questions are, I have two. What foods might attract them and be a good food source should he visit again? And secondly, is it believed that they breed and raise young out of captivity in the woods around our place?
Question number one, I think, was about what feed might be good for them. Cracked corn. Keep it simple. They love cracked corn. That'll make them happy. And in fact, when it comes to bird seed for the backyard, cracked corn is also a wonderful item to add to the menu. The blue jays, the morning doves, and the sparrows will love cracked corn. They may try to nest in the area, but they don't do well. This is not their range or habitat, and many attempts in the past to establish pheasant populations in New York State failed again and again and again until the authorities finally caught on that this is not working. Let's do something else for our native birds.
Liz, thank you very much. Now to Pittsfield and Gloria. Pittsfield, you're on.
Hi, I have two things. One is I heard your comment before about the birds eating by your feet. We've been feeding birds for years, and the chickadees in particular come so close to us that my husband put out some bird seed, the sunflower heart, and in his hand and held it out. And we had chickadees. We have at least one or two chickadees that come on a regular basis, and pine siskins came in, like five or six of them, right on his hand, on his legs, and yeah.
That's amazing.
So that was, it's really a fun thing. The other thing is I see a lot of red-tailed hawks around, and they're easy for me to identify. What is how can I tell the difference between that and a broad-winged hawk?
First of all, look at your calendar. If it's October or later, it's a red-tailed hawk.
Okay.
The broad-winged hawks are all in South America by now. Then when it comes to summertime, broad-winged hawks have a broad black and white pattern on their tail, bands of black and white that you'll
like
see.
Like a Cooper's hawk or a sharpshin?
Yeah, they will also have black and white stripes on the tail, and the red-shouldered hawk as well. But then it comes down to other field marks. But the red-tailed hawk has what the name suggests, a brick red tail. The young ones have a mottled black, brown, and tan tail. A lot of stripes on there. But they, the other thing too is that the underside and the shape of the bird should be the clues. You know, Buteos have a distinctive shape in the sky, and Cooper's hawks and sharpshin hawks have their own distinctive shape. And so once you get through those basics, you should be able to sort down through the list of possibilities and work it from there. The red-shouldered hawk may be the winter hawk that you might mix up with a red-tailed hawk. And their pattern on the tail is different.
Okay.
And also under the wing.
Well, Rich, we are done. Gloria, thanks for the call. Richard P. Guthrie, how do people get in touch with you?
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com. And I'm going to put my Times Union blog up there because I want to show the photos of the stuff that I've been talking about today.
All right. Well, hey, man, thanks a lot. Great job. We'll talk to you soon. Support comes from Bergeron Electrical Services. For over 30 years, providing the Pioneer Valley and Western Massachusetts with all electrical services, interior and exterior lighting, generator installation, and more. BergeronElectrical.net. Empire Exhibits and Displays, providing design, production, and project management services for museums, events, and commercial interiors, featuring acrylic barriers, dividers, and custom safety options. EmpireExhibits.com. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Winslow Homer, illustrator, featuring the Arkell Museum collection of Homer watercolors and woodcuts through December 30th, ArkellMuseum.org. And the Albany Pinebush Preserve, presenting Discover the Night, an online event featuring wildlife and history videos, games, craft downloads, and more, November 24th through December 31st, albanypinebush.org. Oh, that was a long... Oh, now I'm exhausted. Richard Guthrie, thank you for being here. Thank you all for listening.